Welcome to Causeway Casts, presented by Massholes with Mikes. We bring you Boston sports content in quick-hitting segments, followed by our favorite snake draft segment. Now, here's your host, Jeremy Guerin.
And welcome back to the second episode of Causeway Cast. It's your normal two. It's me, Jeremy, Jordan Leandri alongside me, here to talk about the Celtics, and then we will be joined by a guest later on in the show to debate hot stove talk, MLB lockout, and MLB free agency. But first, we have to get to the hardwood. We didn't touch on the Celtics last episode, Jordan. We're going to do it now.
It's time for Green Teamer Topics.
Question for you. What do you think is the Celtics' biggest issue after falling last night at the time of this recording in LA to the Clippers?
They just have no real offensive talent outside of Tatum and Brown. Like, Schroeder can pop off for 25. I mean, I guess he's considered offensive talent, but like, Al Horford's regressed. Marcus Smart can't shoot still. Romeo Langford hasn't taken that step. Nesmith and Pritchard don't play. Grant Williams is like their third or fourth best offensive option some nights. And then Enes Kanter-Freedom is like fourth or fifth. It's like,
you just wanted to say his name.
Yeah, well, I mean, but he's also like the best offensive player. And Josh Richardson's very Jekyll and Hyde. So it's like, they're offensively, like, we knew they were going to be good defensively. And they've proven that outside of the last couple of games. They really stunk those last couple of games. But for the most part, one of the best defensive teams in the league. Offensively, it's just sad to watch. And it's a lot of ISO ball. And I know that's Tatum's game and Brown's game. But I feel like it doesn't have to be. But the way the Celtics roster is currently constructed, they're kind of forced to shot create for themselves a lot more than they are to facilitate for others.
I was going to say, one of the nice things about new head coach Ime Udoka, first of all, Greg Popovich assistant, so you know there is going to be some solid defense played. And as a Celtics fan who just watched them completely just not try on the defensive end, especially towards the end of last season, it's really refreshing to watch. I love that. I love watching this team play hard on defense. But guess what? You're absolutely right. Their offense is the problem. I mean, you can go sometimes 5-6 minutes without a made basket. And that's just not conducive to winning at all. It's not conducive to even having an average offense. This is decidedly a subpar offense, in my opinion. Sometimes they'll get hot. One guy will start really cooking and, you know, they'll be able to make something out of nothing. But more often than not, they're so dependent because this roster being built around two guys is good. But when one of those guys is very injury prone, it's just a massive trickle down effect and puts a lot of pressure on your star player. So we do talk about the big issue, and I think we agree it is offense, but where do you see it going from here?
I don't know if it'll necessarily get better before. Like, I think it'll get worse before it gets better. I know Jaylen Brown is working back to 100%. He's pretty close, supposedly. But just they're a team that I thought was going to be a lot better. Horford coming back, you know, he can be the veteran leader again. There's no poison with Kyrie and Rozier and Marcus Morris and all those guys really, you know, butting heads in the locker room. But offensively, they're just so bad. They're at the point where, you know, they keep playing the way they have been. I would start selling pieces off at the deadline. And I don't know necessarily, I mean, that's ways away from now. It's like 2 months. But, you know, you have valuable guys on your bench. You have Dennis Schroeder you can trade. He's on a one-year deal and he's very cheap. So you can get draft picks and get, you know, you can solve your depth issue moving forward by trading some of these guys, whether it be Schroeder, it could be Josh Richardson. You could trade Horford again if you want to.
Would just be mean.
It would be. But when you look at, and then just the big one, and I still, like, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, as I always do when I suggest this. You gotta at some point, you know, Tatum's your guy. Is Jaylen Brown really number two on your championship winning team?
And will they ever work out the hierarchy that exists between them? Because I still don't think that they want to necessarily defer to each other.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's almost to a point. It's like a two-man version of what the Thunder had when it was Russ, Melo, and Paul George. It's just two guys that take turns shooting the ball, and it's just not good basketball because there's nobody else on the roster that can score. And if you've decided Jason Tatum's your guy, and I think they have, maybe you have to start exploring trading Jaylen Brown for whatever star you can get that's willing to be, you know, a number two. Cause I think Jaylen Brown thinks he's a 1A, 1B guy. And I think Tatum has earned the right to be the alpha in the room.
Any opinions very quickly on who you think that guy should be?
I think Carl Anthony Towns would be a great person to get that for Jaylen Brown specifically. I know the Sixers want Brown for Ben Simmons. I wouldn't do that, but you know, someone like Simmons wouldn't be a horrible get, but I wouldn't trade Jaylen Brown for him unless I'm getting Seth Curry as well. And maybe, you know, a draft pick, someone like CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, potentially. I could see working with Tatum. Bradley Beal is going to be a free agent, so I wouldn't trade Brown for Beal. But
what do you think about LaVine?
I don't think the Bulls would trade Zach LaVine. I think he's fit in very well with the core they have of DeRozan and Lonzo Ball and Vucevic.
And even though all of them are in COVID protocols right now, you're right. They've been really gelling. They've looked absolute dynamite so far.
Yeah. So, but those four or five guys that I mentioned are probably where I would look. Again, I wouldn't trade Brown for Simmons straight up unless I'm getting, you know, Simmons plus. But I think the Sixers want Brown plus, and that's just not going to happen. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I just think I love Jaylen Brown, and people think it's an anti Jaylen Brown opinion. I love Jaylen. I think he's the guy you trade to get the supporting cast that wins you a title. I don't think he's the guy that's there that you build around with Tatum to get the third option. He's a guy you trade to get the second option. And that's not an indictment on him. He's a stud.
And yeah, I love exactly. him.
Like,
I got
he's
you.
A guy you move.
I got you. And I definitely, between the two of them, I would absolutely choose to move Brown over Tatum at this point. Yeah. All right. That's going to do it for our Celtics talk. We are going to move on right now with our guest to Sox subjects.
Now, here's our Sox subjects.
All right, guys, here we are for our Red Sox segment, and we do have a guest. Me and Jordan are joined by Anderson Picard. He is the editor-in-chief. Yes, I am going with that title, and head of baseball stuff over there, Primetime Sports Talk. And he is going to be joining us to talk all things baseball. He does know football, but we're not going to use expertise for that in this episode. We want to focus on hot stove and lockout talk. So, Anderson, I know you're obviously from the New England area. You are a Red Sox fan, like the two of us. I want you to talk a little bit about what you think, what your impressions of the Red Sox move so far. I've already asked Jordan his opinion on this, but what do you think? What do you think of their offseason so far?
I think that they've waited in terms of possibly making any big signing. I think obviously the biggest move has been the Renfro trade, which I've supported for the most part. I don't love the idea of taking on the Jackie Bradley Jr. salary that he's owed this coming season, but I think he's going to improve after a tough 2021 season. And Renfro, maybe, you know, hopefully for his sake, he'll continue at the rate he's been playing at, but I don't know if that's super likely. And then at the same time, Red Sox got a couple prospects back that should help in the future. So overall, I like that trade, and I'm okay with their hesitancy to sign some of the big name free agents. I hope they get one after this lockout is over and everything's all said and done, but I'm okay that they didn't go crazy so far.
All right, so we will get to the lockout later, but Jordan, we haven't really gotten your reaction to the Hunter Renfro trade. We recorded our first episode before that move went down, I believe on the eve of the trade, the lockout. So I want to get your instant reaction to Hunter Renfro heading to Milwaukee.
I think we might have actually recorded it the day that it happened. I could be wrong.
I'd buy that. That would make a lot of sense for us.
My immediate reaction was that the trade was horrible. I did not like it. I did not like the idea of bringing in Jackie Bradley again. I was very content with ending things the way that it was left after 2020. I was more than content with that being the end of Jackie Bradley Jr.'s tenure in Boston. That being said, he's a very overpriced fourth outfielder. I do not expect him to be in the everyday outfielder for them in 2022. I like the two prospects a lot, especially Alex. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. I think it's Benelas. I don't know how to pronounce it. I apologize for butchering that, but he can absolutely rake. And he made that funny TikTok. So the Red Sox got a good one, obviously. As far as Renfro and Bradley go head to head, I think we can expect Renfro to regress a little bit, especially going to Milwaukee. He's not going to have Fenway. He's not going to have the Green Monster anymore to work with. Jackie Bradley Jr., as bad as he could be offensively, he's not that bad. Like he's not, what was it, like 42 WRC plus last year. His OPS was like 450. Like he's not that bad. He should improve. And if their career averages played out next season, I honestly would probably take Bradley Jr. over Renfro.
Really? So you yes. kind of come around a little bit on. So
yeah. If they
full disclosure, if they real quick before Jordan
career
goes.
Career numbers.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say I have massive PTSD in regards to Jackie Bradley Jr. I was so happy when he left, and this kind of scarred me coming back. And I know I definitely had a very visceral reaction when I saw Renfro got traded for him. I believe it was Pat in our chat, Jordan, that jokingly goes, imagine if they got Jackie Bradley back, then proceeded to fall asleep, wake up the next day, and only then did he find out that Jackie Bradley Jr. was actually the return. Then he got a good laugh out of it. I was not so happy. But sorry, Jordan, I cut you off on that. I just wanted to get in my piece on JBJ.
No, I was just reiterating that if their current career averages played out next year, where I think Renfro is like slightly above average offensively with league average defense, and Jackie Bradley is considerably below average, like 10 to 13% below average offensively, but with elite defense, I think I'd take that, especially after watching how horrid the Red Sox outfield defense was when Kike Hernandez got COVID late in the season. That's a huge reason I think the trade was made in the first place. Outside of the prospects, I think making sure that outfield defense won't be complete, you know, hot dog water if something happens in the outfield, it was a big reason for why that trade was made.
All right. Reaction there to the Jackie Bradley Jr. trade returning to Boston. The Red Sox social media had a whale of a time with that one. I don't know if you saw that, but a lot of people were reacting, putting on their story and stuff like that. And I'm like, guys, it's Jackie Bradley. We know what we're getting as fans. Like, let's not get too hyped up about
yeah.
it. But Anderson, I do want to transition to the lockout. Obviously you kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier. First of all, as somebody who, I mean, I like baseball, don't get me wrong, but I'm not nearly as clued in with it as I used to be, especially even like entering college 4 years ago. How long do you see this lockout lasting? When do you see it ending? And do you think it's going to have an impact on some of the bigger names that have yet to go, a Correa, a Schwarber, whether positively or negatively?
I can't even possibly begin to imagine how long it's going to last. I can only hope it's going to be not too long. I know there's already been rumblings about spring training, you know, it might need to get pushed back. People have wondered if this season will start on time, if there will be a season. So I think all those questions just terrify me. I hope there's a season. I hope an agreement can be reached. But at the same time, these are two really stubborn sides trying to negotiate with each other, maybe not even trying to negotiate and just standing firm on their current beliefs. So I'm not hopeful. Where things currently are, I don't feel great about what to expect. In terms of this free agency scope, I think it's a good time kind of to mellow things out. And like I was mentioning with the Red Sox, give some of these teams that kind of stood pat and looked on from afar during that crazy splurge of signings before the lockout. I think it gives teams like that a little more time to regroup and maybe not have to overpay on free agents, because as we saw, there was a big run on signings in the final days of November.
So I agree. I mean, the players union, in my opinion, exceptionally stodgy. Like, they are probably the worst of the unions when it comes to just bullheadedness. They will argue tooth and nail on literally anything with a commissioner's office, but it's not to really praise Rob Manfred either, because he's a walking boob as well. Jordan, I'm going to go to you here on this one, kind of delve a little bit deeper, because you did have that great Nostradamus take about Kyle Schwarber should be testing the lockout thing. Do you think the universal DH is something that could come out of this lockout? Do you think this is going to allow Kyle Schwarber to cash in a little bit more?
I think it should come as part of the new CBA. I think both leagues are ready for it. I don't know necessarily if the commissioner is ready for that to happen. Like, a lot of people say, you know, it takes out the strategy. Like, the American League doesn't have strategy. It's just really underselling the brain power that goes on in an American League dugout. I think teams are tired of watching pitchers hit because, well, for starters, it's horrendous for the sport. That's when you can go up and go, you know, get another beer, or in Anderson's case, another bottle of water or something. I don't know. but it's bad for the sport watching that. Now, yes, when Bartolo Colon runs into one and hits a home run, it's funny, but there's a reason that only happened once, because he's a terrible hitter. The best hitter in baseball for a pitcher was like Max Fried. Among qualified pitchers that hit was Max Fried. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, but, you know, I'm not counting him. But if pitchers can't hit and their job is to pitch, you don't ask a quarterback to go out and play middle linebacker. You ask him to go play quarterback. I don't know why pitchers need to be counted on to go and hit as well. There are people that are specifically designed to hit. and they're called position players or designated hitters. So someone like Kyle Schwarber is definitely smart in waiting this out. Even if there isn't a universal DH in the new CBA, like it's going to pay immediate dividends for him because the market for him dwindles down to the point where teams will overspend for him, or there's more teams that can create a larger bidding war for him. So I think the universal DH should come out of this.
All right. So quickly, in terms of finishing up on the hot stove talk, Anderson, I'm going to let you lead on this one. As you mentioned, there was a massive flurry of signings that happened about midway through the offseason, I guess, if you want to call it midway, because technically the lockout started in early December, December 1st, I believe. What was the worst free agent signing in your opinion?
I think Tigers getting Javier Baez kind of confused me. I know they had a better 2021 season than people expected, and I know they went out and signed Erod, so it's not like Baez was their only move. But I just think a player of that caliber, for as much as he struggled offensively at times this past season, I thought there were a lot of possible better landing spots than Detroit.
Jordan, your worst free agent signing?
I was going to go with Baez. I'm going to go with a different one. I'm going on the pitching side of things, and I think Kevin Gausman to Toronto is going to end up being the worst of the signings for the pitching side of things. I just don't necessarily love the fit in Toronto. I know they made Robbie Ray into the American League Cy Young winner, but there's just something about Gausman. He was not the best after the sticky stuff crackdown. Now, maybe if they, you know, allow the sunscreen and rosin to come back, maybe he'll, you know, rediscover what he had in the first half of the season. I don't necessarily love the move. I think the American League East is full of just bloodbath offenses. They can absolutely destroy you. And I think that that's something that could hurt Gausman, especially someone that relies a lot on curveballs. If he, you know, you hang him, especially that Yankees lineup with those righties, Judge, Stanton, Sanchez, they're going to hit those, you know, around the earth. So you might want to be a little bit careful. I don't necessarily love that move. I thought if they were going to make one of those signings, they should have just brought Robbie Ray back.
And they also signed Jose Berrios to that big extension this offseason too, didn't they?
Yeah, I actually really liked that for them. It seemed like a pretty solid average annual value and was, what, 7 years? I like that move for them, especially the first, like, 5 years of that should be really good.
All right. I mean, hey, Berrios and Kevin Gausman reuniting. They'll be joining up in Toronto. You got, you know, the Raptors are officially allowing anybody who is vaccinated back into the country to play NBA games, and those stadiums are going to be packed. And Anderson, I know you're in New Hampshire. Obviously, if you want to go and see a professional sporting event, you're probably going to have to travel a little bit. So you got to spend some money on, you know, a train, a car, something like that. I think if I were you, wouldn't you want cheaper tickets if you can get them, just so that way you don't have to spend as much for a round trip to try and go and see your favorite team?
Yeah. Right. Are you in reference to Toronto? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's not necessarily Toronto. It could be Boston. It could be whatever. Jordan, you're going to, I don't know, the Suns just lost their 18-game winning streak or something like that recently. But yeah. Have the ticket prices rose there because of the finals appearance last year?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay. Well, interesting. Guess what? Do I have a promo for you guys? So, you know what? It is important these days when it comes to having sports back. You want cheap tickets. I want to see my favorite teams. I know you guys do too. So why not go forward and use our friends over at SeatGeek? SeatGeek finds you affordable prices for tickets to your favorite team. Out in Arizona for Jordan, in New England for me and Anderson, we can all watch our favorite teams by using code Causeway at checkout for 15% off our purchase up to $50. Again, that's code Causeway at checkout for 15% off your purchase up to $50. And thank you to SeatGeek for sponsoring this episode. Now, we are going to be moving on to our snake draft. The topic will be revealed once again to the segment. So let's go.
And to wrap up, it's our Causeway Cast snake draft. Now, who's on the clock?
All right. And as our friend Kyle has just announced, welcome back to the snake draft. So the topic for this one, we did biggest Boston sports villains last time. This time, still Boston sports, but we're going to go with biggest Boston sports what ifs. We did randomize the draft order. I somehow got screwed again and got the number 3 overall pick, but Jordan is not leading off. That would be our guest, Anderson. We'll be starting, followed by Jordan, and I will be bringing up the rear with the 3rd overall pick. So, Anderson, you are officially on the clock. There was no parameters whatsoever to this. You can go as broad as you want. You can go as far back as you want. What is your biggest Boston sports what if?
Yeah, there were definitely a couple different options I could go with here. being the big football and baseball fan that I am, that kind of limited my perspective. But I'm going to go with the David Tyree helmet catch for a couple of different reasons. For starters, how does a guy who has four catches for 35 yards that season make a clutch play like that? And at the same time, questionable whether or not Eli Manning was in the grasp and should have been called for a sack there. So two different, crazy, improbable moments all in one play. And so that's my biggest what if at the 1.01.
Jordan.
Yeah, that was going to be mine. I thought it was going from the Tyree catch, I'm going to go to basketball, and I'm going to take probably the biggest obvious answer when it comes to the Celtics and Len Bias. Just the kind of hype that surrounded the player, obviously tragically dying the night he got drafted. You know, if that doesn't happen, what does that do for the Celtics dynasty of the 80s? You know, what does that do for his career? You know, there's so many questions that are left unanswered because of the tragedy that happened that night.
So for mine, I am going to go football here, and I'm going to say, what if the Patriots relocated to St. Louis? So this was obviously definitely rumored before Robert Kraft bought the team. And even when he bought the team, there were people pressuring him to go and move to St. Louis and relocate the Patriots. That was his hometown team. That was the team that he grew up watching, and he wanted to keep the team in New England and obviously all of the success that has followed. But it's hard to imagine this region without having a football team. I mean, I've grown up all my life without having to deal with that like controversy at all, because the Patriots have been winners my entire life, and now they're back at it again. So I'm glad that I don't have to go and watch and root for like a team that's out of market. It's nice to know that you have a team in every one of the four major sports. To double up here, I'm going to go as far back as I possibly can and say, what if the Red Sox never sold Babe Ruth? I wanted to get a baseball pick on here. I think that I got probably the number one, in my opinion. The curse, everything that comes with it. It seemed pretty easy. I was surprised that the two baseball guys here didn't actually go with the baseball pick first. That surprised me, but I'm liking where I'm standing so far, two picks in. So Jordan, what is your second pick?
I get both ends of the Bledsoe Brady thing to kind of pick at my disposal. I was tempted to go with, because I when we talked a week ago, Jeremy mentioned how he might do Lewis never hit Bledsoe.
You listen to me, dang it.
No, so I put on my board, what if when Bledsoe came back from injury, he was given QB1 back? Because that's a completely different side of things. I was going to, technicality that thing. But since you didn't take it, what if Mo Lewis never hit Bledsoe?
You can take it. Yeah. So I didn't want to double up on football was my reasoning, man.
Yeah. What if Mo Lewis never hit Bledsoe? Obviously, the rest is history once that happened.
All right. Anderson, you're up again. And you got two picks in a row here.
All right, Jeremy, since you took my Babe Ruth one, I'll stick with a different baseball one here with Bill Buckner. If you didn't miss that ground ball in 1986, pretty self-explanatory. Game 6 goes to extras, goes to the Mets. Game 7 goes to the Mets as well. So never know what would have happened, but definitely a pivotal play in Red Sox history. For my third round pick, I think I'll go with back to football. What if Malcolm Butler played in Super Bowl 52 against the Eagles? Obviously a devastating loss for the Patriots. devastating loss for the Patriots and some really crazy plays, obviously Philly special. So just interesting to think about what would happen if Malcolm Butler was on the field for that one. And we might never know the true story why he did play.
There have been multiple reports as to why he didn't play. I know the new Belichick book from Wickersham actually addresses this. I never purchased the book. I kind of want to. I kind of want to just to see what it was like. I want to see what he wrote. That's fair. I don't necessarily plan on taking it seriously, but I think it would be funny to read. Jordan, what are you going to choose to round out your draft here?
I am going to go and play on the emotions of recency bias here, and I'm going to go with the Bruins. Nola Chara gets tripped. Referee actually does his job and calls that a penalty. What the hell happens from there? Because Nola Chara gets tripped. Bruins go on the power play. Their power play had been lethal, especially in the playoffs. That was basically the bulk of their offensive production. I believe it was a one-goal game at the time. They tie it. It goes to overtime. Whatever happens, they steal momentum. Whole series is different. Obviously, wasn't called. I yelled a few expletives at my friend's house. I got in trouble with his mother. So, whoops. But, yeah, what if that happened? What if that didn't happen?
Right. For my final pick, gee, this is hard. I'm between two here, but I'm going to use the strategy that I I took last time. So last time I rounded out my draft instead of doubling down on baseball for Boston Sports Villains, because I drafted A-Rod first last time and I wanted to go Steinbrenner, but instead I went basketball, I believe, or football, one of the two. This time I'm going to go basketball, and I'm going to say, what if, again, recency bias, what if the Celtics stood pat and drafted Markelle Fultz instead of Jason Tatum? You see the way things have played out, whether it be Kyrie, whether it be Gordon Hayward, and then Al Horford all leaving. Horford did come back, but it's really been a train wreck of moves after that 2017-18 team made the East Finals without Hayward or Kyrie. If they didn't have Jason Tatum on this team would still be rebuilding. Danny Ainge probably would have been fired long before now. Brad Stevens could have been fired long before now. Or they would have just been one of those middling Eastern Conference teams that grabs the sixth seed and then gets immediately swept by whoever they face in the first round. So I'm going to say, what if the Celtics actually took Markelle Fultz and his busted shot instead of Jason Tatum? All right, that's going to do it for us. Anderson, thank you very much for joining us. Pleasure to have you on. We hope to have you on again sometime in the future. But for Jordan and Anderson, I'm Jeremy. You can find us at Causeway Casts on Twitter. The graphic for this snake draft anonymously will be put out in the coming days, so that way you guys can actually vote on who you think had the best snake draft, because I think this is the most fun part of the show, in my opinion. So again, for the other two and myself, saying have a good one, everybody.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time for another episode of the Causeway Cast, presented by Massholes with Mikes.